All right, on this episode of Bouts Talkin' Bouts, excited to be speaking with an individual who's in quite the prominent fight coming up. It is Brito versus Harris 2. It goes down at BKFC Fight Night Jackson. And we have got Elvin Brito and Caleb Harris knuckling up and toeing the line once again. But this time, BKFC welterweight gold is on the line, and very happy to be talking to Caleb right now. How's it going in that sense, man? It seems like this is a big moment for you. Like, I saw you at the post saying, my dreams are becoming reality. So can you talk about how this buildup is feeling for you?
It's been an emotional ride. I've been in this sport. People don't realize, but I've been fighting for 10 years. I'm 28, so I literally, from the time I was a senior in high school, I've been fighting and chasing a dream that, you know, one day, like, fighting would be able to pay the bills. And after 10 long years, it's finally starting to pay dividends. And here I am now, 10 years later, you know, went from being a kid at 7 years old wanting to be a Power Ranger to I'm fighting in less than a month for a world title. You know, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, you talk about the involvement in a myriad of combat sports over a meaningful period of time, but I also think it's kind of cool because the BKFC kind of stuff only has risen in prominence in the last few years there. So it's kind of cool that you've like honed your skills to such a degree as like a fighter in general, but then for something like this to pop up and you've clearly taken it like a duck to water sort of thing.
Oh yeah, just wanted to try it one night. First BKFC 2, I think I saw in Biloxi, or 3 it may have been, but I watched those and I was like, I want to do this. So I started putting out feelers, trying to find it. And by the time I got a hold of somebody, BKFC 5 was coming to Biloxi again. And I got on that card. And since then, I've grown and evolved with the sport.
Yeah, and what does that evolutionary curve kind of look like there? Because I've talked to certain fighters who will sort of adjust on like a fight-to-fight basis. It's like a rapidly growing, ever-evolving sport. Like, what do you mean specifically with that as far as like the, I guess, drills you're doing and maybe some of the unique recuperation, like if you're doing hand strengthening or anything like that? Like, what's the camp looking like in those kind of components, I guess?
So I'm kind of on the edge when it comes to how a lot of fighters have just wholeheartedly become diehard bare knuckle fighters, and you know, they're posting videos of punching the sand, and I'm not knocking that or knocking any fighter that does that. I mean it's a conditioning technique. The Muay Thai fighters do it all the time with their shins and stuff. I personally haven't done that. I do enough stupid conditioning as it is. I don't need to run the risk of my pride letting me crack a knuckle.
Yeah.
More or less, my training has been focused more on boxing. A lot of people will say, well, this isn't boxing. I'm like, well, it isn't, but it is. I mean, at the core base, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, this is boxing. We just took the gloves off and made it a lot nastier. So a lot of my focus has gone from being an MMA fighter and combining my kicks and my punches and my takedowns and my judo. It's kind of took a back seat to now me focusing on my footwork, my head movement, my hand speed, my hand placement, and learning to read an opponent, because on a boxing level, you've only got two weapons. That's your left and your right hand. If you lose one of those, then you're in for a rough time fighting. So I've had to hone those particular weapons a lot more over the last few fights.
Yeah, I've really noticed that, at least in the certain social media posts you have there. Like, it seems like the different boxing gyms is where you're predominantly getting in the work. And I'm kind of curious from this perspective, because I've seen a lot of BKFC fighters who have that like sweet science-minded boxing kind of approach. Like, what are the, I guess, defensive considerations you have to have when applying that boxing style to bare knuckle? Because obviously the cushioning not quite there, but I imagine there's some level of crossover.
Well, there's good and there's bad when it comes with it. Like, I use a lot of my movements from MMA and a lot of my aggression to help win my fight. A good example of where boxing doesn't transition well defensively to bare knuckle is you go back and look at my last fight with Derek Finley. I think it was the clip that BKFC shared where I'm throwing like four or five right hands. Well, a lot of people wanted to comment in the comments and talk about how, well, he didn't actually land those punches. Finley's hand was up. Well, yeah, Finley's hand was up and against the side of his head, so there was his hand basically cushioning the punch, so I wasn't cutting him. But at the same time, you've got a guy that's 175 pounds at the time throwing everything he's got, and the only thing that's stopping his fist from hitting your head is about an inch and a half worth of hand. So regardless of the fact that the hand blocked from making contact with his head, he still took damage. And so in bare knuckle boxing, you have to understand that you can't just take a shot to give a shot anymore. I mean, some people still choose to do that, but you're kind of taking your advantage out of the game and you're leaving it up to chance or who's got the tougher chin. And I've never been a big fan of gambling, so, you know, I'm not one to just stand there in the pocket anymore. I've learned, hey, if I can hit him without me getting cut in the face, then that means I can fight sooner, which means I can get more money this year. So that's what I continue to focus on, is being aggressive but also being conscious of where I'm at.
And the MMA kind of crossover components have been mentioned a bit. But in the sense of, I mean, you talk about the mentality of like doggedly going forward and everything like that. But just in terms of working within the clinch positions in the BKFC rule set, how much of your MMA experience just galvanizes what you can do in BKFC? Because I find a lot of MMA fighters can really use those attributes in that kind of context.
Oh, 100%. I won't lie and say there haven't been a couple of times where just muscle memory, I could go back and watch a fight afterwards, and you can see where muscle memory took over in the clinch, and I was starting to step in for a hip toss, or I was using my judo grips to lock down arms so that we could get a separation, or I was using it to stop him from punching me while I could punch him. Other than just amping up my training has just become that much more technical overall. I mean, when I'm training MMA, I'm training my grips. I'm still thinking about my boxing. I've got several professional fighters that are my teammates and friends that still have fights coming up. I still train my wrestling, and all that plays a part. And I think that's why, when you look at it, I've never been finished in a fight. And I've had 8 bare knuckle fights, and that's saying something, or 7, going to be 8. You know, that's saying something. I've never broken my hand. Because I train to be able to last the entire fight. I don't put all my faith in a one-punch knockout. I don't put all my faith in outpointing somebody. I'm in there to fight like a wild animal for however many rounds we've got to go. And if it gets dirty, it gets dirty. If we can make it pretty, we make it pretty.
Yeah, it's curious you're talking about some of those facets there. Like, I'd seen the post you had a little bit ago where you're saying that you have the Weapon X gene, like it doesn't take long to heal up. You talk about your durability in the sense of never been finished throughout the BKFC run. Like, how much of that, I guess, durability and dogged determination, like in terms of the spirit, is part of it? But also, that being said, it seems like the fight IQ is a very big thing for you. Is there having to manage between those two things at all? Do they ever cross over with each other necessarily? Like, I guess, like, can you speak to those attributes, like just the durability and just also having the fight IQ on the other end of it to kind of temper that and not get a little too hectic and overextend yourself kind of thing?
The best I can explain it is I'm a really good soldier. My coach and best friend Dustin is a really good general. He's a badass fighter, don't get me wrong. But when it comes to our working relationship with my fights, he's been with me since the beginning. He's the one that goes in, and he's the one that helps me study, and he's the one that's brought me up with learning how to read a fighter in the recent times, because before, I was like a robot. It was, you plugged me in, you pressed a button, and I did whatever the button said. That was it. One of my other coaches claimed I was like playing a video game with me, because whatever you told me, I ran. And I put a lot of faith in my team. I don't always believe the hype in myself, but I believe the hype in my team. And when it comes to durability, I train with the best and the baddest fighters in the state of Mississippi and possibly in the whole South. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, nobody hits me harder than any of my teammates. Nobody. Nobody in any fight I've ever been in has hit me harder than my teammates have hit me in training before. I'm not scared to go in and fight. Now, I do understand that with time, you know, you only get so many good shots to the head before it starts to wear you out. So now I'm taking that. I know I grew up learning how to dogfight. And now that I'm learning how to use my boxing head movement, my boxing footwork, my MMA aggression, I'm combining it all. I'm not scared to stand in the pocket, but if I don't have to, then I won't. So I'm okay with getting into an exchange because I'm not worried that if that one punch slips through and connects, I'm not worried about going down.
And it's a cool thing. Like, I mean, from the rip, you talked about just being in a world title fight and how this has been so many years of hard work in the making. I also think a cool kind of tendril to that is it seems like you're one of like the grassroots kind of stars that BKFC has really fostered and grown on the platform. Like, you really, I mean, you had fights before, obviously, but a lot of the BKFC guys would have some level of like, oh, it's a UFC veteran or former WBC champion or something to that effect. Like, can you speak to being one of the, I guess, grassroots talents BKFC has had and getting this world title opportunity?
It's, like I said, man, it's been a wild ride. My first BKFC fight was the Jason I. Artem Lobov first fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I show up, I went from being a local top 10 prospect in Mississippi with a 3-1 record in MMA to I'm sitting here next to Leonard Garcia, you know, Isaac Ballyflag, Jim Allers, Jason Knight, who just came out of the UFC, Artem Lobov, and they're signing posters like it's just another day at the job. And I'm over here and I'm asking one of the announcers, and I'm like, am I supposed to go sign something? And he goes, yeah, you're fighting, like you signed the cards. So I'm like over here, and I'm like the new kid at school in middle school where like you don't know anybody other than your like one friend that came with you, and it's like, okay, what do I do and how do I not make myself look like an idiot? And by the end of that night, man, like Artem Lobov, it came up to me and talked to me like just a normal person. You know, all the other big UFC stars that were there, you know, they came and talked to me and just were like introducing themselves. And it's crazy to know that, like, I know these guys like on a personal level. Like, we've literally like talked about fights and talked about cross training. And now, in a matter of 2 years, my reach as far as like gyms that I can train with and people like Jim Allers, I'm still planning to go down when I get a chance to go back down to Florida and train with Jim some more. Like, me and Jim are super cool after our fight. It was a hell of a fight. It was the hardest fight I've ever had. But at the end of it, we earned each other's respect, and we still, I mean, occasionally check in on each other. And that's just how it is at a professional level now, I've realized. It's not like the amateur bullcrap where your pride's got to lead you everywhere. You've got to make everything a public spectacle. You know, I was supposed to fight Julian Lane, but he decided to go get his name in the news more than he did getting a name on a contract. So now I'm fighting Elvin for the title, and I plan to take that belt, and I plan on David Feldman having to just search high and low to find somebody to take that belt from me.
Yeah, I mean, the fight made a wealth of sense to book just with a lot of the different, like, rankings bodies that follow BKFC and stuff like that there. But yeah, it's just been an interesting story. Like, you talk about fighting Jim Allers at one point and then kind of training with him thereafter. It seems like there's a real thread of growth throughout the BKFC run. Like, even when you got your big, you know, highlight reel knockout and you're like, oh yeah, I've been fighting for 8 years at the time, you know, first ever KO and stuff like that, but then it's like, oh, I don't want to be a one-hit wonder known just for that. And I feel like your last couple performances especially have really underscored that too. So just, yeah, can you speak to, I guess, the idea of being like so goal-oriented? Like, how much do you, I guess, take to enjoy these victories before you get into, okay, what amendments can I make to kind of grow from here?
I get the night of the fight. I get the night of the fight to enjoy it. The next day to, you know, talk about things and just live in the moment. And then generally Monday, my best friend Dustin or my coach Johnny, they're calling me up and saying, all right, look, it was a great performance, best performance you've ever had. Here's what we got to fix. And I go, okay, what do we got to fix? And we start, like, this camp put a lot more effort into running. We had the incident, I know, and I apologize for having scheduling conflicts. I completely just missed yesterday. I got home from running 3 miles after teaching jiu-jitsu at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I went, ran 3 miles, drove an hour back home, and kind of hung out for a little bit. And I think by like 10 o'clock that morning, my fiance watched me lay down on the couch, and I didn't wake up till I think whenever I had missed your call. It's just, I've put a lot more effort into this because I've taken this seriously, that this is a world title. I come from a town of, you know, I graduated with a class of 42 people. You know, I don't think there was 300 people in my entire high school, my 4 years there. I come from a really small town, and I'm about to put Lake Mississippi and Bars, Mississippi on the map.
Yeah, it's a lot of curious dynamics in a lot of regards. I mean, like, even before we started the actual interview component, like, before you were talking about how you're getting ready for, you know, the kids' class there and stuff like that. Like, is there any level of, like, the kids checking out your BKFC fights, or is it, like, not as much crossover? Like, it's a certain, like, visceral kind of aspect to the sport, just with the cuts and everything like that. Like, do they kind of check you out throwing down and stuff like that? Because I imagine that would be a thing they would want to support. Like, if I was someone training at Primal MMA, I'd be wanting to check out your fights.
Oh, yes. I've got parents of students that I teach, because most of my kids are anywhere from 6 to 12 years old in the kids' class. I've got parents that send me video clips of the kids telling me good luck the night of the fight. After the fight, you know, I've got parents that buy tickets for their kids. I've got one, he bought him, his wife, and his son, who I've been working with for the last year and a half, bought 3 front row table seats from me because his kid wanted them for Christmas. That was what he wanted, was to see Coach Caleb fight. And, of course, with the weight cuts and stuff, that last couple of days, parents start to know, like, okay, Coach Caleb's weight cutting weight again. Y'all better make sure y'all mind, you know, type deal. It's always fun, but honestly, it helps me. It helps keep my mind off of things. Because, I mean, I stay busy. I have my own personal business. I have fighting, and then I have the gym that I own with my business partner, Dustin. And it, somehow, some way, the kids will find a way to make me laugh right before the fight. And it's just, it's nice knowing that I have their support.
Yeah, I imagine it creates a level of levity, like maybe takes away from what's like a high pressure kind of situation there. But yeah, it's fun to take in those sort of moments too. I mean, it seems like something like that, I mean, albeit a little bit different, but when you posted about Robin Black doing some like technique breakdown videos on you, like, it must feel good to kind of have those like brief sort of moments outside of just like perpetually working. Like, it must be nice to see those kind of things and then be like, okay, cool, that was nice, back to the grind, as it were.
Pretty much, man. When Robin Black, like, no one told me he was doing that. I woke up one morning on Instagram and looked on Instagram and saw I got tagged in something or mentioned, and I saw that it was Robin Black, and I'd been watching his breakdown videos for like a year now. And so I messaged his Instagram account, was just like, hey, it's an honor to, you know, have you break down my video, you know, yada yada, just thanking him for it, really, because I mean, him tagging me, I think I went up 300-400 followers just off of him tagging me in it. I mean, it's sad to say in today's times, but I mean, us fighters have to admit, we need our following. Like, our fans is what helps make us money, because if we don't have a following, then promotions don't want to put us on their cards. So he immediately responds back and says, one of the cleanest knockouts I've ever seen, you know, and then, without me even asking, sends me the original clip of my video, and then sends his clip that he edited and said, here you go, you know, share it. Didn't ask to be tagged in it, which, of course, I didn't tag him in it, but just, it was so cool to see a guy, like, with that kind of fame that was like, hey, man, yeah, here, you know, share this to your media, you know, gain your own followers, you know, don't worry about me. It was just really cool to for him to do something like that for me.
Oh yeah, Robin's a cool dude and very passionate about martial arts, so that's a cool experience. You talk about like the follower kind of component to combat sports though. Like I thought it was cool when you broke 5K on Instagram, how you were donating a significant amount of your purse to help raise awareness for people who, you know, have committed suicide, just that, you know, mental health kind of altruistic effort there and everything like that. So it's cool that you use your platform for something good. Like, I mean, sometimes like social media can be a little bit vapid and like, oh, you got to get X amount of followers to get these opportunities. But I think it's cool you're using your platform for something meaningful like that.
Man, since I started doing this whole fighting thing, the only thing I've ever really cared about, I mean, yes, this was a dream of mine to be a champion one day, you know, but as I got older, the only thing I really care about is the next young nerdy kid that, you know, gets picked on in school that decides he wants to be a Power Ranger or something. I want him to be able to look one day at my fights and say, you know what? He was just like me, and he grew up and became a world champion, or he fought for world titles. You know, why can't I do that? You know, that's all I care about, because, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're not pushing for somebody to be better than you, then, you know, you're wasting your time. I mean, I hope to one day have every one of my students be able to submit me at will, you know, be able to outclass me in boxing, because that means I did my job. You know, and with my platform that I'm growing now, it's one thing to push myself, but it's another to have a reason. And suicide and depression has always been a big thing in my life, with me dealing with anxiety. So I know there's got to be other people out there, especially in the stigma of men can't be weak. And so if I can show that a guy that can go out there and fight 5 2-minute rounds of bare knuckle boxing and still turn around and talk about how, you know, there's days where depression hits and I'm crying on the way home to the gym and I have no idea why, then maybe I can prove to some other man out there, some other boy out there, that it's okay to not be okay from time to time, as long as you don't sit down and wallow in it, but you get up and push through.
That's a beautiful, very powerful message, man. And I love hearing stuff like that for sure. And, you know, a lot of this conversation has been oriented to like growth, progression, etc. So to that point, I'm kind of curious, like the Elvin Brito fight, July 2020, split decision defeat there, closely contested fight for sure. I guess this is a bit of a two-part question. Like, what do you see as the biggest differences and the biggest instances of growth between yourself, but also with Elvin Brito?
I watch that fight almost every night. I watch him get his hand raised. I watch me make mistakes. I watch openings that he leaves. I've watched other fights of him with Palomino. I've watched other fights of him with his other opponents. And I've watched what they did versus what he did. I've begun to study and read the man. And I look back, and the more and more I look back at that fight, yes, everybody, that was a hard fight for me. When I found out that I had lost that split decision, it was rough for a little bit. I blamed the judges. I blamed everybody else. And finally, I had to admit about 2 weeks in that it was nobody's fault but my own that I lost that fight. And since then, I haven't watched the fight until this camp came back around. But I always said I wanted my rematch. I wanted my rematch. I wanted to prove, and I to this day, anybody that I've lost to in BKFC, I want to fight again. The only difference is right now is Elvin is the only one that I've lost to that has something that I want. He was ranked number one. I said if we fought again, it needed to be for the title, and here it is. But I beat myself in that fight. I fought the wrong Caleb came in and fought that night. And so since then, I've had two fights. I've had Noah Cutter, who was a guy that just ran his mouth and finally talked his way into getting a fight with me, and we saw how that went. And then Derek Finley, who, although may not have had the greatest boxing record, boxed some of the greatest boxers in his time and had over 60-something professional fights to my 20-something fights total. And I outboxed the boxer. I have grown, I have evolved, And on January 29th in Jackson, Mississippi, you are going to see the best Lionheart that has ever stepped into that ring. And the only thing that you'll have to look forward to after that is the next fight, because I'll be that much better from this fight.
Yeah, and are you one of those guys where, like, being the hometown kind of player bolsters the confidence that much more, just being a Mississippi lad and getting out there for this one? Like, is that adding an extra compounded part to the motivation?
I love it because I'm bringing real fighting. How do I word this? I'm bringing media back to the fighting in Jackson. A lot of promotions don't like coming to Jackson anymore because they don't feel like they can make money. A lot of local MMA shows. I know a lot of my guys, other than one promotion, B2, that has started putting a lot of shows in Jackson. Yep. No other MMA promotion wants to fight around here. All the rest of them want to fight 3 hours away, where we all have to travel and stay the night and stay away. Like, from my teammates have kids, you know, 2 and 3 years old. They don't like being away from them. They want the night before their fight to be able to hold their family, and, you know. And so, thanks to B2 coming back, I think that literally was a part of the reason why I was able to convince David Feldman to bring BKFC to Jackson. And it's nice seeing that my family and my friends and people that I went to school with that I haven't seen in 10 years reach out and want to get tickets to come watch me fight, because they remember me in high school telling people I'm going to fight. That is going to be what I do for a living. That is my dream. And so I put that weight personally on my shoulders to show people from my hometown that I never gave up. This wasn't a waste of time. This wasn't some insane idea that I had that fell through halfway. I'm proving every day that if you want your dreams bad enough, that you can find them.
Well, that's a great sort of parting thought in a lot of regards, but just if there's anything you wanted to mention that wasn't articulated or touched upon in this interview, I figured I'd give you the floor, Caleb. Like, is there anything you want to add as a parting thought as we're kind of wrapping things up here, man?
Just everybody, if you can't buy a ticket to this fight, I ask that you please download the BKFC TV app. If you want, message me for a referral code and I'll get it out to you. It's simply $5 a month and you get access to all kinds of bare knuckle fights. It's a great app. The company is growing and getting better every day. And then I want to thank my sponsors, Mary Jane, House of Glass, for some of the best glass work I've ever seen done. Not to mention Greenheart Wellness for their CBD products, Combat 8 for the gear, Downrange Lifestyle for the packages, Izzy's Beauty, Jimmy Lyle of Lyle's Machinery, Mike's Power Washing, and there's so many more that I just, off the top of my head, those are just some of the best sponsors that I've had. I literally could not do this without you guys, and I appreciate all the support.
Well, this is a great chat, man. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm really going to appreciate this fight coming up here January 29th there, Brito versus Harris 2. I think it's going to be a great BKFC fight night out there in Jackson, and going to be cool to see the welterweight champion solidified there. So yeah, again, to reiterate, big thanks for coming on the show, man. Best of luck with the remainder of the preparations, and just looking forward to checking out the fight, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on, man.